Fisheries. In order. All members are present. I'd like to introduce Molly McCann, our Fisheries Committee staff, and Karen Brand from my office. This is an organizational meeting. We're open to suggestions of what we should pursue and welcome any things you might suggest. Most of you heard the presentation from John Tyson yesterday. I found it very interesting myself, and I think it's probably one of the best things that happened to the fish industry in a long time. I have high expectations of new developments they may have. Anybody have any suggestions that what issues we should pursue down the line?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Is it your intention that we examine and look at specific problem areas? We have a problem area of habitat protection on the Kenai River and the impact of a tremendous amount of fishing, recreational fishing guides on the Kenai River. Would that be something that you would think that we would bring to this committee?
Definitely.
All right. And then further from that, I think we really need to get into the whole issue of the hatcheries and the enhancement programs. On the Kenai Peninsula, we have had several hatcheries that the state is trying to turn back over to the local aquaculture associations or turn back to private. And I think I've heard comments from the other hatchery people across the state that maybe we need to look at where we are with the hatcheries today.
Have most of you seen the study that's been done on hatcheries?
Just recently?
I guess it probably hasn't been printed.
The final report is being printed now, and it should be released next week.
Was that the result of the meetings last year?
It was the legislative study chaired by Senator Wise.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, thank you. Following up on Representative Phillips' comments, when we look at the whole hatchery issue, I think there are specifics in there that we want to focus on. We know that the state's effort has been to redirect the primary responsibility for hatcheries in our state to private nonprofit organizations. Now, if by her comments, Representative Phillips, mean we want to pull the state back into more than the technological involvement that the commissioner spoke of on his overview to the Resources Committee, that's one thing. But one of the problems that we're having in my district is that the technologists, the biologists, the people with the expertise who have been with the Katori Hatchery, say, for a long time, for a number of years, are the ones who are being taken out of those positions. And the reason they're taking out of those positions is not because it represents less money spent by the department, because all of those staff's expenses to the state are paid for by the private nonprofit hatchery. It's simply they want to cut personnel. So I think what we have to focus on is, and so of course it becomes a wash, but the thing that is fiscally it's a wash, but technologically, in terms of expertise, in terms of how you're going to negatively affect those hatcheries, it's not a wash. In fact, it's quite a loss for the enhancement program of our area, because the effect will be that those state employees, and they've been in the system for a long time, and of course they choose to remain state employees, so they will be forced by the department's actions to leave that hatchery and that job, that area where they're applying their expertise, and go bump somebody off in the seniority system of the state workers. And so I would like to see us focus on some specific aspects of Representative Phillips' concerns about hatcheries and ensure that each area of the state has an equal and fair proportionate amount of resources when we compare it over time, for example, in the Northwest, and I'm sure in Representative Nicolai's district, we have not done the job of enhancement that we have in other areas. Now, there are many explanations, of course, but again, I would like to see some fair play. I'd like to see some common sense applied to our policies that we will promote, and let the department know in no uncertain terms when we think, because of the information we'll get from the experts, that they're making some wrong moves.
Anybody have anything to add to that?
Tim Cliff said it all. You know, we did check it out closely.
I'd like to also, maybe we should focus on our marketing aspects of the fisheries industry. And, you know, the Tyson thing is a good move, but there's a lot of different ideas about how to continue ASME and what to do with ASME and such. So I'd like to put that down also.
And as well as the other fish processors around the state. I'm sure they're pretty alarmed when they saw the newspaper yesterday, wondering where they were going to stand.
Mr. Chairman.
Clay.
In that regard, I think we're going to want to, I think that somehow we've got to come up with more money for ASME. But what we have to be careful about is we reach a point of diminishing returns for marketing our domestic fishermen's product, because the margin sometimes for the fishermen is so close to the edge. For example, a recent reading of my local newspaper, the Kodiak Daily Mirror, shows three stories on the front page. Each one was dealing with pollock and the low margin of profit that the fishermen were forced to tie up because they just simply can't go out and fish for product that does not pay them enough to pay the bills to go out and catch the harvest. And then, of course, there was a story about the salmon fishermen and another story about low prices for tanner crab. So, you know, I think our fisheries are in heading for some very desperate situations, and we've got to not only encourage assistance from things like Tyson, perhaps, and Mr. Chairman, yesterday you noted that while I want to encourage it, I'm still hesitant because I know we have a bad habit of giving away the farm sometimes in our public policy decisions, and I didn't get really a square answer on what's in the Tyson game plan for coastal Alaska. It doesn't matter, as far as the coastal fishermen are concerned, whether the offshore harvesters and processors are from Japan with the lower 48 or Timbuktu. If they're taking product upon which our local livelihoods depend, our constituents are negatively affected. And that's where I did not quite grasp exactly what was in the game plan, the Tyson game plan, for our local fishermen.
Yeah.
Under the heading of marketing issues, and I would like to add, maybe this is a separate issue, but I think it would be fitting in there. I'd like to add a discussion on the whole concept of value-adding our product before we ship it out of Alaska.
Anybody else?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a place where Tyson's probably going to be able to teach us something. I'll also suggest that their marketing budget is probably the same as ASME's, except they spend that in a week. And we can probably learn some marketing lessons from them. But they are going to be a mixed blessing. I don't think there's any doubt about it. They are going to have a positive impact on some things and a negative impact on others. Question, Mr. Chairman, on the Representative Hudson's 1% assessment. Is that in bill form that we can get a referral on if we so desire?
Is that
it hasn't been introduced yet.
It hasn't been. Would we want to discuss that early enough in the process so that if we think it's a good idea, we can support it, and if we think it's a bad idea, we can a preemptive strike?
I think we can find out if he has a draft form.
And I see it's limited to salmon.
That issue has caused a great deal of conversation on the Kenai Peninsula. So that will be a major point of discussion.
Yeah, it's hard to expect all fishermen to agree with it.
Right.
Well, if we're talking slim margins, you're taking 1% of the gross right out of the equation.
On the CDQ issue, Mr. Chairman, I understand from talking with the Commissioner of Community and Regional Affairs yesterday on this issue that that was a three-year test program. I've had a request from the community of Saldovia that they be allowed to come develop a CDQ program. The original program calls for only those coastal communities off the Bering Sea, but it is a three-year test program, and that would be one thing that would be considered when they come up. If the program is successful and they can show that it is, it is improving the economy in the coastal, especially the smaller coastal villages, maybe we could have a discussion on, maybe we'd be premature this year to do it, but maybe next year, whether to extend that program to other areas of Alaska.
Yeah, I'm sure there could be a lot of interest in CDQs. But
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a very good point to discuss myself, because I know that there are villages in my district where they have been fishing traditional species, and somehow they got passed over in the CDQ discussion. And one of the biggest points, I think, in my opposing the IFQ CDQ proposals before the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council was the fact that there was not provision for youthful entry. So what we have here is people who are living out where the raw material is and virtually being shut out of that resource that has for thousands of years sustained their economic base. And so I think it's something that we really need to work on as quickly as possible in this committee, because we're getting Alaskans shut out of a resource before they've ever had an opportunity to get involved, especially in some of the new species. And that's the danger, Mr. Chairman, of you know, these moratoriums. Well, if you weren't standing in line, there was no way you could get up the line, and that's been the story in rural Alaska since statehood.
I'm sure that communities all over the state are going to be interested in CDQs, but I'm sure there's a limit to how far you can go with it. Members of the public have any comments? I might interview Ray Gillespie.
If I could, Mr. Chairman.
Rick Lauber.
I'll introduce myself. My name is Ray Gillespie. I work for Association of Aquaculture Associations, which includes the Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association, Prince William Sound, and Northern and Southern Southeastern. And the issue of hatcheries was raised, and I thought I'd share with you a couple of things that I've discussed with the group that I represent. In the area of hatchery transfers, it's an ongoing problem because it seems that in each budget cycle, there's a new group of hatcheries that's dropped out of the operating budget without any transfer plan in place. It causes concern amongst the legislative delegation, it causes concern amongst the fishermen, and it creates a crisis of sorts for the aquaculture associations and the enhancement programs. This has happened in virtually every aquaculture region in the state. Cook Inlet has had the Tutka Hatchery, and this year Crooked Creek is being dropped out of the operating budget. Prince William Sound had Main Bay 1 year. Beaver Falls and Ketchikan is in the same situation. This year in Southeastern, there are two more hatcheries. There's a Kluwak Hatchery in Deer Mountain. One of the concerns that all the regional aquaculture associations share is that creating a crisis by simply dropping those hatcheries out of the budget without having a transfer plan in place has been a source of a lot of problems, and there's probably a better way of doing it. In the case of Tutka, because some of these hatcheries that are dropped out of the budget don't have a cost recovery program in place, your option is to mothball those hatcheries or to put some capital investment in there so you can get a cost recovery program operating so it'll sustain itself. Tutka has been taken care of. I think state appropriated a couple million dollars to get a cost recovery program in place there. The Main Bay Hatchery in Prince William Sound has been successful because I believe they had a cost recovery program of sorts in place at the time. The Beaver Falls Hatchery in Ketchikan continues to be a problem because there was no cost recovery program in place. The state appropriated about $2 million last year to construct a cost recovery facility, but because that's a sockeye facility, there's a four-year lag before any cost recovery revenues come in. So one of the issues that we may be asking this committee and the legislature to look at is a transition program there. And one of the options we're looking at is a possible deferral or forgiveness of some of the enhancement loans that will equate to or match the amount of operating costs of that facility. Last year, the bill passed. The Senate died in the House Rules Committee. There's another issue I think that Representative Phillips is looking at, and that deals with some evasion of the enhancement taxes. There has been a practice developed over the last 4 or 5 years that some processors, and this is certainly, I don't believe it's any members of PSPA, but some of the less responsible operators have attempted to evade the enhancement taxes by giving either a delivery bonus or a fuel bonus that's on a separate fish ticket, if you will. And Representative Phillips has sponsored legislation and probably may do it again this year to address that problem. One other issue, and then I'll leave you, and that is the issue of the marketing tax. While the group that I represent haven't taken a position on the marketing tax, there is some concern there because there has been a suggestion that the marketing tax would be in place of or replace part of the enhancement tax. Again, what that does is create an operating budget crunch for the aquaculture associations, and I just laid that on the table for your consideration. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gillespie, we often have these requests after the fact. You know, we have a program in place. People take advantage of the program. They make it, and then subsequent to their success, other operations come along and they don't make it. So they want a forgiveness, as in the situation you just expressed. Did you, in your deliberations with the group you represent, explain how this legislature is to address that problem? Because we have it, whether it's schools or when we have a program, and a group that goes ahead and organizes and they're successful and they pay back the loan, and then here comes another group, they didn't make it because they didn't do something right. They want a sign-off. They want free money. So what suggestions do you have to us as public policymakers to make sure the playing field is even and equal so that we don't have those kinds of difficulties?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davidson, that's a good question because what we're doing here is we're talking about a state facility, a state-owned facility that the state has dropped off. The state is asking the Aquaculture Association to pick up the operating expenses. Fairly unexpected, something they hadn't anticipated. The state had never expected that facility to pay for itself, and there was no cost recovery in place. So the association I represent has responsibilities and operating budget, and they have to be self-sustaining. They don't have the funds to pick up $400,000 to $500,000 a year in operating expenses for a state-owned facility. So we're trying to offer and work with the state in a cooperative fashion to come up with an interim plan. And I don't think it's, we're asking for a handout. We're lucky, we're trying to accommodate the state's interest in its effort to reduce its operating budget.
Rick?
Yes, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
My name is Rick Lauber. I represent the Pacific Seafood Processors Association, and very pleased to see that the House appointed this committee because we have a tremendous number of, to say the least, interesting issues that are confronting Alaska, and I think it's going to take the efforts of this committee and the legislature and the administration and all of us working together in order to confront them, as well as representing the PSPA, a number of issues that were mentioned here come within the purview of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. I'm a member of that council and also the chairman of the council. Also, I'm a member of the U.S. section of the Intergovernmental Consultative Committee that was formed between the United States and the then Soviet Union, now Russian Federation, in our negotiations in the North Pacific, as well as the Bering Sea group that includes the Russian Federation and the United States, but also Poland, Korea, Red China, and and Japan. Poland, Japan, Korea, China, the United States, and Russian Federation, working on matters in the Bering Sea. We have made some progresses. Notably, one was the creation of the new North Pacific Anadromous Fish Commission, which replaces the old IMPFC that, in fact, went out of existence within the last couple of days, I believe. And the first organizational meeting for technical purposes will be held within the next few weeks in Ottawa on that. So there's a lot of exciting things. Also, it's a very difficult time. There are a lot of reasons for it, and I'm not going to put anyone at the top of the list, but certainly one of those that has to be considered is what's going on in the Russian Federation and the old Soviet Union. The impacts that they're making on our fisheries is significant. Unfortunately, I was not able to be here and listen to the gentleman from Tyson's, but I was in Washington, D.C. week before last. We were negotiating with the Bering Sea people in the Soviet Union, and a member of that group is the president of Arctic Alaska, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of Tyson. And he was telling me that he has been offered pink salmon by the Russian Federation. Pink salmon delivered to his vessel, trap caught, towing the traps out to the vessel, bright fish, live, at 3.5 cents a pound.
Oh, dear.
And he is this year thinking of becoming involved in it. You can imagine the impacts that that would have upon us. I understand that the any company is in business to make money, and if they're confronted with paying somewhere between 12 and 25 cents a pound for pink salmon in Alaska and versus having live pink salmon delivered to their vessel in the Soviet Union. By the way, that's our salmon are usually, I know, at 12 cents a pound, at least double and maybe more of that to get it to the cannery. So your tendering costs would be, in fact, at 12 cents a pound. The average cost in some of the areas of the state was 15. So you paid more to get it to the plant than you paid the fishermen to catch it. So the cost to us is going to be prohibitive. The other factor that we found out, a couple of sources told me that the, as you know, the Arctic Alaska Seafoods and other factory trawlers are operating in Russian waters. They shut down in the United States, 200-mile limit, and they move other places, either off the coast of Washington, Oregon, or they go to the Soviet Union, and a number of them are operating over there. they are allowed a an allocation. Russia complains that they're bribing the observers and taking above their allocation. We have no proof of that, but Russia wants to know the figures that we have when they offload in the United States. Although there's some speculation that they're offloading at sea some of their products so that it doesn't come into the United States. But getting back to the subject of what it's doing to us in the industry and the impacts on our fishermen and processors, they are allowed a bycatch, if you can believe it, of 8%. That's legal for them to take 8% bycatch according to their agreements with the Russians. Now, assuming they followed the rules and took only 8% bycatch of halibut, which we suspect they're taking more than that, but if they took only that, their price of their halibut would be more than the 93% pollock that they're allocated. So it makes it worthwhile to them to pay, actually, the Russians more money than we are paying fishermen to catch the fish here.
So is that a perfect example of a wonderful opportunity for high grading?
Oh, certainly. But in their case, they're supposed to keep all of it. If the idea is that if they catch more than 8%, they're supposed to move. They have a unique system in Russia. The companies hire the observers and pay them. They pay them $50 a day in American dollars. One of the operators was telling me some of them actually want their $50, you know, two 20s and a 10 to close the work each day. Some suspect that for another $50 and maybe a bottle of vodka, they'll never come out of the bunk. They just stay in the cabin all day. But getting back to what the impact this is having on us is that today in Japan, because of Japanese efforts fishing in the Russian zone as well as our efforts in the zone, you know, that product comes back to the either Japan or to the United States. If we catch it and can bring it back in, we meaning Arctic Alaska or other factory trawlers, if they bring it back in, it's a product of the United States. Today in Japan, you can buy all of the halibut you want, processed, head off, frozen, between 65 and 75 cents a pound. So it, and in the pollock market today, there are processors that have at least, in some cases, over a year and a half supply of serene. There's a backlog of serene. Whether this pink salmon fiasco in Russia, by the way, Russia has far more pink salmon than we do, which was kind of make it kind of funny when we were sending them pink salmon, and they had, I think, about 40% more pink salmon that year than we did. That was the year we called it sending pinks to the reds. But in any case, the threat of that hanging over the head of our fishermen and processors at that low price salmon, most of it we would suspect would go into the, would be frozen, taken into Bangkok or Singapore, Taiwan, the places where they've taken the high seas illegally caught salmon and processed into probably most of the cases would be canned. That would then go on the world market in competition with the canned product that would be produced by the United States and Canada. So I can go on and on and on. We have problems with, someone mentioned here earlier, crab. They're bringing crab out of the Soviet Union. Same thing, going directly on the market, same customers and so forth. When that hits the restaurants, they're taking complete ride on ASME and all of the work that Alaska's done over the years to build the king crab quality and snow crab advertising, and they're paying not one single penny. The factory crawlers, American factory crawlers, are going and they're not paying anything into ASME. They're not, as you know, paying any taxes in the state of Alaska and so forth. So it's making it a very, very difficult time. I don't want to go ramble on, but I just wanted to give you some illustrations of some of the things that are confronting the industry, the fishermen and the processors, and it's it doesn't look well. I was talking with an old processor, or one that's not old, I wouldn't like calling him that, but been in business many years. He said, you know, usually we have at least a product or two, species line or so forth, that's in pretty good shape. We may be in trouble on salmon, but crab is all right, or, you know, our cold storage operations on halibut, so whatever. We've got some good, some bad that kind of offset each other and keep us alive. Today, there isn't a single product, a single seafood product in Alaska. The processors aren't losing money. In most cases, for instance, in crab, the highest offer one of them told me he had was $2 a pound less than what he has in the product. So when you're holding a few million pounds of product, you know, a few million here and a few million there, first thing you know, you're talking about real dollars. So they back this out into what we're going to have problems with prices and marketing and so forth. It's it does not look like it's a wonderful time for us. But that's why I say I think this committee is going to have a full plate, and I think you can help us a lot, and that's why I think it's important that you meet. If you have any questions or anything, by the way, anything you talk about CDQs, of course CDQs is a product of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, not the legislature. And one of the things I think is going to be crucial to the outcome of CDQs and the future of CDQs is how well these CDQs do. And whether they do what the council was trying to do, which is to get people involved in fisheries. People who have not had the opportunity to get into fisheries, get into fisheries. It's not wonderful job, wonderful ideas, but it's not to pave roads. It's not to build gymnasiums, new city halls, pay for people graduating class to go to Vladivostok. It's to put people in fisheries and set up a long-term thing. If it does that, I think you'll find that the council will be sympathetic to expanding it or continuing it. By the way, it was never planned as in perpetuity. Whether it might happen that way, but it was not the idea that it would be in for forever. To give you a head start so that you're not deprived in other areas.
Yeah, I might add that money is going to be very closely watched as to what benefit it does to the various communities. That's my idea, too.
Encouraging or optimistic about future CDQs. Everybody would like to have them, but they're going to have to prove that
it worked.
Did some good.
Representative Moses, it will give you some comfort to know that every 2 years, when I hear read across the House the new legislation or pre-files, that there has never been a time when they mention House Bill 2 that does not strike fear into my heart every time. So,
what bill is that?
House Bill 2 was your bill that removed the exemption for fish processing from time and a half for overtime.
And that never did hurt as bad as you thought it would, did it? Be honest.
We did not all go broke.
Right.
I will tell you today whether that was the reason or there were other reasons, that there are very few companies that were in business in 1970 when that bill passed that are in business today. Not because of your bill, but...
Mr. Chairman, and I'm glad Mr. Lauber is here on a different topic. I think we as a committee really need to look closely at the federal acts that are up for renewal or doing away with. Especially the Magnuson Act, and I'm glad that you're here. I think we need to schedule a hearing on those acts.
Yeah, we also have marine mammals.
Right, and endangered species. Mm-hmm.
Yes, those are ominous clouds hanging over our heads.
I just had a question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I suspect that the ominous clouds of which you speak for your people, the processors, holds equally true for the catchers or the fishers. What has your organization or the group of people that you represent, what do you see as some of the options of plugging these, shall we call them, for want of a better term, Russian holes into our market scheme? Because it seems that if it's a totally laissez-faire situation that the resource is going to be gone over there after a little while, if there's that kind of corruption, and if it's just going to be like that for very many years, what are the options? What did you have this committee search into, or what kinds of resolutions, which don't do a heck of a lot, but give us some direction.
Well, obviously, the state cannot do a tremendous amount, but what the state can do is hold the federal government's feet to the fire, if you like, to make sure that we do have some control over the product that's coming into this country. We know how much it is, what it is, and that there be some possibly restrictions on undersized halibut, for instance, that's coming in. Certainly we know how much there is of it. It was most frustrating when we were in Washington, D.C., dealing with the Russians to see their frustration, because it's such a chaotic situation over there that even the fisheries ministry in Moscow is having great difficulty in control over their, whether it be co-ops or their so-called fishing organizations or whatever. Everyone seems to be doing their own thing, and when they try to cut down on, when they, meaning the Moscow central government, attempts to cut down on allocating resource to foreign processors, they find the Dalriba or some co-op or something, find some method of granting research projects to foreign companies to get involved, and or they take their allocations and reallocate it to foreigners and so forth, because they're so starved for hard currency, whether it be dollars or yen or whatever, that it's just driving them. Apparently, I don't know what you call it, bribery. I guess bribery has to deal with public officials, but at least payoffs to people is, my experience has been endemic. I was there in August, and I haven't led a sheltered life, but for within 12 hours, I was present while two public officials were bribed. So I would be police officers, but I'd never seen that before. Just take money out of your wallet and pay off. And it seems to be, it just seems to be part of their system. And you're right, they're selling their birthright. Their fisheries are going to be so depleted here in the next few years. And we wonder what they may do. There's some disagreement as to the amount of the stock, say, for instance, the donut hole. We know that the largest block of those come from the Aleutian Basin stock. The Russians say that it's 80-20. In other words, 80% ours, 20% theirs. That means that a lot of the fish they're catching, here we have the dilemma. Here we are in the North Pacific shutting down these fisheries. So we can conserve, and then we have the same people that have an allocation, the factory trawlers, that then turn around and go to the Soviet Union and fish on 8 out of 10 fish they catch may well be fish that is Alaskan fish. You know, it makes the circle but goes through their water. There's not, you can't pass a law and stop it, but you can have some influence with our federal government and management and so forth to do what you can. And
I imagine we're going to need all the cooperation we can get from the State Department, Federal State Department. Now, would you say what we're faced with over there is probably lack of sophistication and ignorance of the industry and the marketplace?
Certainly the marketplace. They have some reasonably good scientists, but their scientists are not being consulted. This is merely a matter of people trying to get a hold of hard currency, and they're just selling out for it. And maybe that's an oversimplification, but and then it's such a frustrating situation. I had a meeting with the Minister of Fisheries in August, and they were asking me about investments and getting investments in the Russian Federation. And I said that I had talked with a number of people who had been exploring that possibility, but they found it so frustrating. Either their bureaucracy, you know, I didn't say you're a bunch of crooks over here, but many of you have read the articles in the Anchorage paper here was it a week ago Sunday or something like that, about the gentleman trying to get into a caribou horn, reindeer horn sausage business, and did all the work and effort and got everything going, and then somebody comes along, and Koreans, I think, in this case, came in and apparently looked to me like they just bribed the people involved and they kicked this guy out and so forth. Well, you can imagine somebody trying to make an investment. It's one thing for a factory trawler to move in there and do that thing. They can move off and go someplace else, but for somebody to get in and build a plant on shore, that would not be sound business practice, I don't think, right now.
But thank you, Chairman. Well, it sounds like their true desperation is going to be exported to our market system, and it's going to put our system into turmoil as well. But the thing that's interesting to me is, how is it that we can so easily allow the fish that is caught in Russian waters become qualified to be sold in the American marketplace? I suspect also the fact that reading from what's coming down their streams, I suppose there'll be quite the market square scare when some of that product from Russia starts glowing in the dark. But how is that factor going to affect our market for our Alaskan product?
This is not a recorded session, is it? It is? Oh, well, I fortunately the atomic problem seems to be far north of where we're catching fish, but the United States is working on that problem with the Soviet Union. I think there are some funds that will be available, at least first to assess whether we have a problem. But you're correct, if in the, I think they call it environmental impact language of the worst case scenario, it could be a serious problem for us. You know, let's, we're optimistic, let's hope that doesn't happen, but...
So how do you plug the hole of that product coming into our market system at such an advantage, and that disadvantages to such a degree our own producers and processors?
Well, I think at least it should, the first step is to have it labeled from where it is, that it's not.
A federal labeling law, then.
Something of that nature. Now, we had this situation, you'll remember back with the Bellingham Coal Storage joint venture with the Russians that started our first joint venture operations years ago. That was an ironic situation because they were catching, in many cases, yellowfin sole, which had a high bycatch of crab, and they were killing a lot of crab. But in the meantime, in order to pay their fishermen, the American fishermen delivering to the joint venture vessels, they had to ship into the United States Russian crab. Now, when they shipped it came in as a product of the USSR. And in all fairness, Bellingham Coal Storage labeled it as such. But where we got into a problem was that when it went out to the jobbers and brokers and so forth, they immediately threw, not all of them, but many of them threw away the cartons that said product of the USSR, and he just picked up Alaska king crab boxes and put it in the Alaska king crab. So now we had a situation where the joint venture fishermen were killing American crab, or at least a high bycatch of American crab, so they could deliver the yellowfin sole, which in order to pay the fishermen, they shipped in Russian crab, which obviously deflated the price. And what we're seeing now is just the same thing, only on gigantic proportions, really touching us the heart. When they hit us in our salmon and pollock business, they are really hitting us where it hurts, and it can have some serious consequences for this industry. And I say industry, I'm including the fishermen, the coastal communities, all of the support industries, you know, not processors or whatever it is.
Do they pay time and a half for overtime?
Do they? No.
They're not going to pay at all.
Anything else, Mr. Lauer?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anything else from the public? Comments or suggestions?
Mr. Neer. My name is Jerry Neer, and I'm from from the Kenai Soldaten area, and I live on the Kenai River, and I would just maybe like to comment on that a little bit if I could.
Please do.
And it's just a follow-up to some of the comments that that Gail has made. I've lived on the Kenai River for about 30 years, and there's sort of been an evolution in that fishery. In that time period, I've been really rather fortunate to have the largest variants of that species happen to occur in that river. To fish in the Kenai River today is sort of similar to maybe fixing a tire on a freeway, in that there's not much courtesy. Even though there was a reduction in the horsepower on motors that could be used, what they call the Kenai River 35 horsepower special is really equivalent to one of the older 50 horsepower motors, and it'll still push four people in a 20 or 23 foot boat and leave a considerable wake. And we've experienced a lot of bank erosion. Whether that in itself is detrimental to the river, I'm not sure we can determine that. It apparently really hasn't damaged the fishery much because our runs are still really quite good. Aesthetically, it's changed the banks quite a bit. Where we used to stand on fish is now just mud and clear up in the trees. And you can observe a lot of the trees starting to lean because the root structure is, and where it was planted has just been taken out. I think probably in the future to reinstall, I think, the thing that all of us enjoy when we go fishing, which is maybe some peace and tranquility and a little bit of aesthetics that we might consider maybe for the heavy use months in the summer to consider making the lower river a drift fishery. Because there's five or six places that boats can be put in and a number of places where they can be retrieved. It'll lower the cost of the people that use the river because they won't have to have the investment in a bigger boat and a motor. It'll be less noise and less pollution and exhaust gas going in the water.
You don't mean with gill lines?
No, these are just...
When you say drift fishing line.
Well, that's a boat that's sort of shaped like a bean and has a very unique bottom configuration in that you can hold it in current with just a pair of oars and even go upstream. Because apparently the current goes under the boat and up the stern and gives you a little bit of upstream thrust, and so it's quite easy to control. It's very peaceful and tranquil, and I think it's the experience a lot of people pay for. They're very effective. The problems as I see it is it takes a while to do that. There would need to be, I would say, periodic rest stops along the river to prevent the obvious problems. But I think in the long run for that fishery to really flourish, if that's something we need to take a look at. Then a couple other items, and I agree with some of the testimony I've heard. I think our fishery at the state level is in serious trouble because we are seeing some factors that drive the cost of fishermen to the point where the product they have to sell cannot compete price-wise with the international market. If you consider that when I first got to Alaska in 61, that was just that was the end of the fish traps, which ultimately, if you're talking about just cost and efficiency, is probably the best. But those are outlawed. Now there's a huge capital investment that has to be added to the price of fish, and that's why the foreign markets now can compete very favorably, and we've seen farm fish occur in South America and starting in over in northern Japan and Russia, northwestern Europe, and then also along the British Columbia coast and South America and South Island, New Zealand, and that's going to really impact us. And I don't have any answers to it, but we've outlawed, I know, farm fish, but I can tell you this, that the ones that are brought in from Norway are now bringing in refrigerator tankers, and they bring a higher price in the fresh fish market than anything else in the seafood stands. So, brace yourself. But those are just some comments. And,
well, I'm sure we're going to be seeing a lot of survival of the fittest, fishermen and processing throughout the industry.
In my years here, there's been about five new seafood marketing efforts. The first one started about in the early 60s was the king crab, and there was a scallop fishery. Now we're seeing some aquaculture with some oysters, The Pacific blue mussel still has some problems because they always grow a pearl. And then, of course, the surimi. But I still think we need to pursue that because I think there are a lot of other things that we could do to address the market needs on a worldwide basis and maybe enhance the revenue of the fishery from that standpoint. And one more thing, so much of our fishery is outside owned. I think the number that Clem Tilling gives are 60 or 65%. And a lot of that bypasses the economy of this state. And I don't know how we would ever get some of that back. That, I think, is also important.
Get it back with value adding.
Well, we're kind of running out of time. We have anything else from puppets? Anything else from committee members?
Yeah, are we going to, I noticed that we're going to pay attention to regulations on oil spills and stuff. Are we going to also focus on water quality? I know that the DNR are doing right now revisions to water quality. Do we want to, does the body want to pay attention to what happens with those revisions?
Well, I'm sure we'll be looking at that as necessary.
Because it does affect the habitat of fish and whether the fish can see their food or not.
Well, if there's nothing else, we're adjourned.
Molly, how soon do you think that report will be done?
I have, actually, I can get it.
On what? Okay.